On the video, first of all, thank you everyone for joining. On the video, you have from Ice Miller, several of us, but those who will be speaking will be myself and Michael Ott. I'm Louis DeLucia, an attorney at Ice Miller, working on the NRIA/AIRN liquidation trust case. Also on the video is Michael Ott, who will be speaking in part on some of the agenda today. We also have Matthew Ward as a representative of AIRN Liquidation Trust as the trustee for this call. We will also have Tommy Fierro from AIRN Management, as well as Rick Budd on the real estate side of AIRN. So let me go through quickly what the agenda will be today. The agenda will be, you know, in addition to the introductions I just did, the real estate update, which we will do as soon as Rick Budd is available and back online. We will have a tax update in terms of providing as many answers as we can in connection with the questions raised by many of the investors on K-1s and other applicable tax forms. Tommy Fierro and Eisner Amper, who's also on the call, I believe they should be on. We should verify that they are on, will be answering some of those questions. We'll also provide a litigation update, some discussion of the claims reconciliation process and where we are. Some of you saw some of the filings, which include the second, third, and fourth omnibus claims objections. Michael Ott will address some of that. We'll address your investor questions as posted to the portal as best we can. The trustee will say a word or two, and then we'll adjourn. So that is a quick summary of the agenda, not too dissimilar from what we've had in the past. So I don't know if Rick Budd is on yet. I don't know that I see him. But Tommy Fierro, are you on?
Tommy, you're muted. I think you probably realize that, though, given the talking in your phone.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me now? And he's
awesome.
Terrific. Is Eisner on as well?
Yeah, is Ryan on?
Not sure if Ryan is on, but you know, a lot of the information that I'm going to share with everyone today is, you know, one, a repeat of some of the information we've given historically, but also some new information based on the new tax documents. And I did speak with Eisner prior to this call to kind of put together this outline. So first, I'd like to start by reminding everyone that we cannot and will not provide any information that can be construed as tax advice. Accordingly, we're always going to urge you to consult with your personal tax advisors with respect to any tax documents received and how they may impact your personal tax situation. Now, I have reviewed the list of questions that have been submitted in advance of this town hall meeting to Ice Miller, as well as those that have been coming in directly to the accounting department, and I will address as many of those as I am able to, given the limitations previously mentioned. I'm also going to provide some general explanations of the documents, some key dates, and what to look for moving forward. So for 2023, which is the year that our bankruptcy plan was filed, was confirmed, there are two tax documents you should have received and obviously shared with your tax advisors. The first is the pre-confirmation K-1, covering the period of January 1st, 2023 through August 25th, 2023 from the Partners Portfolio Fund. The second document is a post-confirmation grantor letter for the period of August 26, 2023 through December 31st, 2023 from the AIRN Liquidation Trust. Those are the only two tax documents you'll be receiving for the 2023 tax year. Both sets of those documents have been mailed out to all investors via USPS. If you have not received either document, please email us at info@nria.net. I monitor that email address and I'll make sure that someone in our accounting department gets you an electronic copy as soon as possible. We do try to respond to all requests within one business day. Now, the pre-confirmation K-1 is the same tax form that you have been receiving historically, with the key difference being that this year for 2023 is the final K-1 you will receive from the fund, based on the confirmation date and all the assets being pushed over to the trust. So it's important to note that there is an ending balance of $0 as the income tax basis of your partnership in the fund, because that has been transferred to the AIRN liquidation trust. We have received a bunch of questions from investors claiming that they have not received their distributions that are listed on the K-1, and maybe you're wondering if something went wrong. So I just want to repeat, we answer as many as possible in emails, but these distributions do not reflect a cash distribution, the amount that you're seeing on that K-1. This is just a transfer of your investment from the fund to the trust. Everyone's investment has been moved over to the trust as of the effective date. So we also received questions, can you confirm that my balance is reflected in the trust? And yes, everyone that's listed on the investor schedule and received the K-1, all of those amounts are now, you know, being picked up underneath the trust. The grantor letter is a new tax document that only relates to trust, which is now where your investment is held. Obviously, historically, the fund was a partnership that provided K-1s. Trusts are just a little different where they provide grantor letters. But both documents are similar tax documents in the sense that they report your allocation of profit and loss from the company. They do not, however, provide a capital account balance. That is something that you're going to want to discuss with your personal tax advisor, as they are responsible for tracking that information. And it will become very important to make sure that they understand that balance in the future once we are able to begin making cash distributions, whenever that may be. Now, as far as timing of the future documents and what you should expect from us moving forward, we've also really received many questions about the 2021 and 2022 amended K-1s. So those we're targeting November 30th. We just got that date yesterday from Eisner Amper on a phone call to have both of those amendments complete, which means we will be mailing those out and, you know, able to provide electronic copies beginning the first week of December. Now, I do have to explain how these work and answer some of the questions we received. I do get a lot of questions along the lines of, you know, how am I supposed to, you know, prepare and file my 2023 taxes when I don't understand my 2022 K-1, for example? Or why does my ending capital account balance for 2022 not match my beginning capital account balance for 2023? Another question is, I invested, for example, you know, $350,000, but my K-1 shows a number that is much less. So I am going to explain that process, how some of those numbers, you know, how we arrive at those numbers, and also how some of these things are changed as a result of the bankruptcy. So historically, for those of you who invested early on, the K-1s provided during 2018 through 2020 were incorrect. They did not reflect any allocation of profit or loss. All they showed was how much you invested and how much you received back and the resulting total. That's not consistent with the tax code and how partnerships operate from a tax perspective. That period is also before I joined NRIA and before we started working with Eisner Amper. In 2021, first year using Eisner, we applied historical loss amounts for the period of 2018 through 2020, and we allocated those amounts across the board based on the percentage of your investment over the total amount of investments received to date, which was then reflected in your beginning balance. We also allocated the 2021 current year losses on the same basis. Now, generally, when you're making tax allocations in a partnership, it's based on, you know, your investment as a percentage of the total. So across the board, you know, most of these numbers where you're seeing, that just means if there was, say, $10 invested in the fund, you invested $5, that means you would just get half of the allocation to keep the number simple. Now, what this means is this is the amount that's reflected in box one on the K-1, which is the line item for ordinary business income or loss. Again, this reflects your portion of the loss based on the size of your investment compared to the total. However, those tax returns for 2021 were due September 15th, 2022, which is about 90 days after filing for bankruptcy. There was still a bunch of information that was unknown at the time of that filing deadline, but it was important for us to get the returns filed to avoid costly penalties that could amount to, or would have amounted to, hundreds of thousands of dollars per month if the returns were late. Now, I want to confirm that we have always filed our returns timely. We receive emails asking why our tax documents are late. So again, just to repeat, we always file our tax returns timely. And I'd like everyone to keep in mind that, you know, we have over 2,000 investors. And as you all know, this is a very complex situation. It's standard practice for companies of this size to be filing extensions to complete their tax returns and in turn send their documents to you all for your personal tax filings. Now for 2022, which is the year that we filed bankruptcy, there was other key information that remained unknown and really could only have been determined as a result of the bankruptcy. Those returns for 2022 were due September 15th, 2023, which is less than a month after the confirmation of the bankruptcy plan, which is really something that provided us significant guidance. For example, the bankruptcy plan called for the disallowance of rollover bonuses for, you know, we're talking $20 to $30 million that impacts really the ratios across the board as many investors had transactions of that nature. We also filed the investor schedule in the summer of 2023, and we received a ton of inquiries from investors, you know, reviewed the document, asked for explanations of their account. Some of those questions required us to change certain allocations for investors based on, you know, their personal investments versus their corporate investments or their retirement account investments, and things of that nature, where maybe some things got doubled up and needed to be allocated more appropriately. Now, again, we made as many of those changes as we could that were available at the time of the tax return filing to be sure that we were avoiding any costly penalties. The 2023 K-1, the pre-confirmation K-1, as we've been calling it recently, is really the first tax document that was prepared after the bankruptcy, which really allowed us to have the most accurate information possible to get these returns filed. So how do we bridge the gap? You know, everyone's asking about the amendments. The amendments are going to be handled through something that's called an AAR, which stands for an administrative adjustment request. AAR stands for an administrative adjustment request. And this is how we're going to amend the information. So what this does is it's going to show you any changes related to the 2021 and 2022 tax years. Most importantly, they're going to allow you to see and follow that the ending capital from 2021 is going to match the beginning capital for 2022. The 2022 ending capital is going to match the beginning capital for 2023. Now, these will not require you to amend your personal tax returns for those prior years. As I mentioned earlier, we're targeting November 30th, 2024 for the distribution of these documents. Because that information is going to be provided to you in 2024, any changes related to the prior years will be reported on your 2024 tax return. You'll receive a statement in connection with these AARs that you should be sharing with your accountants to report in 2024. Now, if for some reason we get delayed into early 2025, same concept, the changes will be reported in 2025, the year that the information becomes available to you. Moving forward, the grantor letter that you should have received recently is the only tax document you will receive aside from the AARs on an annual recurring basis. The deadline for filing trust tax returns on extension, which we anticipate using, is going to be September 30th, 2025. We're always going to try to complete the returns as soon as possible, but you should not be expecting to receive that 2024 grantor letter before September 30th, 2025. Now that those documents have been distributed, I'm able to walk through those documents. I can explain generally what the information on the grantor letters mean. So right on the first substantive page, you have a note saying, quote, the following income deductions and credits are to be reported on the federal income tax return of the above named grantor if required. Now, immediately below that shows the information that you should be reporting on your personal tax returns. The two numbers you see are interest income, and I'll explain how they basically translate to the K-1. So to the extent applicable, This is something that would have been reported historically on the K-1 in box 5. Now, for the grantor letter, this instructs you specifically to enter this amount on form 1040, which is your personal tax return, on Schedule B, Part 1, Line 1. The second item is your passive income from partnerships. This is something that was reported historically on the K-1 in Box 1. Now, the grantor letter instructs you, again, specifically to enter this amount on Form 1040, your personal tax return, on Schedule E, Part 2. These amounts reflect your share of the corporate activity, again, based on your size of the investment. There's some other numbers on the page. W-2 wages are also listed. That's just really other information that gets disclosed, but you'll see there are no specific instructions there on where to enter that number. You should discuss that with your personal tax advisor if you'd like more clarification. But that's simply the share of corporate wages that get allocated to you, along with the other expenses that make up the gain or loss for the year. Next page, if you go down, shows the gross receipts. Same thing. This is really just for informational purposes. Shows the amount of receipts, whether that be from interest income or the sale of a property or whatever the case may be. And it, again, shows your allocation based on the size of your investment. The next page shows the pass-through activity from AIRN Holding Co. Now, basically what this does is kind of just shows you the new corporate structure. So as of the confirmation date, all of the properties we owned were moved into new separate PropCo LLCs. All of those LLCs are owned by AIRN Holdco, and then Holdco is owned by the trust, and collectively, you all as the investors are the beneficiaries of the trust, and that's why you're receiving this information. Now, for those of you who've already reviewed this form, you'll see that there's an $8 million loss. That reflects the total for the period. That amount then gets allocated pro rata to you all, and that's how you get your passive loss from the partnership. The next page shows interest income. This amount is the total for the company, and then again gets allocated pro rata to show your portion on that first substantive page. So really it's just, you know, it shows you the total, so you kind of see what's being passed through, and then you get allocated your portion. That's what's most important to you and gets reported on your tax return. Now the final page is simply the New Jersey version of really the same form, and that's going to show you the allocation that relates to New Jersey. So just to kind of wrap up, really all this information should be discussed with your personal tax advisor. None of us on this call represent you personally. We do not understand your full tax situation and cannot provide you tax advice. But I am hopeful that this presentation today helped answer some of your questions that you may have related to your tax documents. For any requests for electronic copies of these documents, or if there's any other clarification questions you may have that are general in nature that I would be able to respond, please don't hesitate to email us at info@nria.net. Thanks, everyone. Kick it over to the next speaker.
Thanks, Tommy. I appreciate that. I don't know if Eisner is on and if they wish to add anything or supplement any of the tax discussion just now.
Yep. So this is Ryan Sievers with Eisner. I am on. I don't have anything specific to add. I mean, Tommy, I think your summary was very good. I just wanted to note that the summary on all those statements are consistent with both my understanding and expectations surrounding tax filings to this date and going forward. So, Tommy, I think it was very good.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you. All right. We will have, if there are any open questions after that very comprehensive and great summary by Tommy, on the tax questions, as we come to them, they'll stay on and answer those questions if they are different than what was just summarized. But now we'll turn to the real estate update. Rick Budd, if you're available can address the real estate update for the group.
Sure. Thanks, Lewis.
Thank you.
I apologize, everybody. I had some technical difficulties that I'm amazed I figured them out. But anyway, we're here, and let's go forward. I think easiest thing, let's start off with contracts, right, which is near and dear to everyone. So we do have a contract that we had before on 506 Henry Street in Brooklyn. We expect that to close this month. So that will be behind us. We have a contract that we've been discussing, and we still have it from a year ago on our two Guttenberg properties. And we had to do with a kind of a court approved extension, hopeful that they would close on those properties, continuing to do environmental diligence, never ending environmental diligence, I might add. And they were due to close next week, but they've asked for an extension. So that was already built in. So they have to pay another $50,000 for a 2-week extension. So that we still believe hopefully will happen sometime in November. We do have a contract that we just executed for our one of our Delray properties. They had been on the market for some time. We might have mentioned that we switched brokerage firms. That is under contract now for about $4.9 million, and we expect to close that either at the end of this month or in or early November. So that's good news. We also had, I think we've mentioned in the past, we had our Secaucus property, Osprey Court, the former home of Mr. Salzano. It was a long process to get title to the property. We managed to get title. We managed to do the repair work that was necessary for water damage. We put it on the market a week ago, and it's under contract 2 days later. The market was $695, and there were about 6 bidders at that price. So the final price ended up being $750. So anyway, and that should also close before the end of the month, or probably also again in early November. Staying in New Jersey, right, the station, 4901 Bergen Line, we're in the releasing of hopefully the final stages of releasing, which has been going well. We have about 5 more units to go to get back to that 98% capacity. So we're very pleased with that. Our grocer, who we've also had under a lease now for over a year, since April of 23, and they've started paying their rent, which they have been for about 4 months now. They continue to pay while they're waiting for their construction permit. West New York has been difficult at best for some reason. Anyway, the latest is we now have a hearing on October 24th, hopefully a final resolution so that the grocer can build out the grocery store there, which will be very, very helpful for our building and the other buildings we're going to talk about and the whole neighborhood. The Grand, right, which is just a couple blocks away, we were hopeful of having our certificate of occupancy by the end of September. That's now pushed till the end of October. We were touring there yesterday. Early November seems more to me, but we're still shooting for the end of October. Just to refresh, that's 156 units that'll be coming online. November is not the best time to be renting apartments, but whatever we get, you know, starts to reduce our carrying costs. And it's a fantastic looking building. The website should be up soon for people to be able to get a full, better perspective and view. The Metro, which is our site next to the Grand, to have an identical building built, again, another 156 units. West New York, you've heard this before. We had a building permit, which we couldn't exercise because we were building the Grand. We were also building a parking lot for the municipality in between. So you couldn't have 2 construction sites going on at the same time without closing the municipal parking lot. So we've been working with The Ice Miller bankruptcy team will be filing with the court, asking for clarification at best, for the city to renew our permit and not have to have us go back and refile again. So that'll be something on the docket probably in the next week or so. Moving Philadelphia, our land down on the river in South Philadelphia, we continue to have JV discussion, some more active than others. We're optimistic about that site. We think that we may be hitting this at the right time, with Comcast, you know, committing $1.5 billion about 2 miles from there for extensive entertainment, hotels, other entertainment venues. So we will keep everybody up to date on that. Florida, which, you know, people, you know, it's on everyone's mind, right? So I know that we've had some inquiries, and just to clear up any confusion. So with the storm coming to the West Coast, right, our West Coast asset is Fort Myers. Unfortunately, we lost, you know, our assets. They were destroyed back in Hurricane Ian, which was October of 22. So our sites now, and then we've done demo for the various land portions, or for the hotel and the hotel, the commercial space, and the harbor, right? Because we lost our entire marina there. So we're hoping for the best for everyone there and for the community. But the only thing we have left on that site is a restaurant, which is leased to Landry's. And it's a net lease. Landry's needs to pay us, excuse the expression, hell or high water. There's another 5 years left on that lease. So again, we'll hope for the best. We mentioned a contract in Delray, and we will have two other sites, or two other finished properties with certificates of occupancy that are available right next door. So we're hopeful that this will get the market restarted again. They're expecting a tropical storm. There's been a tremendous amount of rain in Florida, especially particularly in South Florida. So again, we're get the one closed, and hopefully the other two will not be too far behind. And we have our two sites in Fort Lauderdale, the identical sites, one approved for 389 units, the other getting approvals for 427 units. We expect those approvals to come in probably by November, December. Again, with the interest rates coming down, we've had a lot of interest from other parties about potential JVs. We're not there yet, and we're still entertaining sale offers, but I think we still need rates to settle down a little bit more to really flush people out and get something viable. I think that's it, Lewis.
All right, terrific. Thank you. There might be a question or two on the real estate later on in the list of questions, but we'll come back to you on that as they come up, if they do come up. Next, I guess, is the litigation summary or update. It's not going to be case by case. That took a long time last time. I think it's going to be more of an oversight overview of where we are. Let me see if I can share my screen. Forgive me if I mess this up, but I will try to do it. Let's see if this works. All right, can you see that now? That is a PDF. Can you see it? All right. Let's see if this works. So, litigation summary. We have at least 20, and that's not including the West New York case that Rick mentioned earlier, 20 pending lawsuits against not less than 97 defendants. We are suing all of the insiders. We're suing accounting firms. We're suing law firms. We're suing recipients of fraudulent transfers. We're suing parties who aided and abetted the fraud. So there's a lot of action going on there with more than 20 lawsuits. There's depositions, there's discovery ongoing. So that's an extensive process that admittedly is expensive, but is the process by which we will, as you hear at the end, we believe substantially exceed the distributions contemplated at 25% to 35% in the disclosure statement. So these litigations are ongoing, but here's a quick summary of where the active ones are. One is awaiting a decision. That's the media effective case. You remember that's a case against a media company for aiding and abetting, promoting, as well as the recipients of substantial fraudulent transfers. That action has been litigated, and now we're waiting for a decision by the bankruptcy court. Judge Sherwood heard the matter and is apparently writing an opinion. We don't know what it will say, but we certainly hope we win. We have settled several, including certain cases relating to real property, such as S3 and the Gutenberg property. Those are cases where we've settled, and those settlements generated through one way or another, and I'll describe it later on, recoveries through claims, adjustments, etc. We have at least 5 cases in mediation. We have the case against Mona Shaw, which is a lawyer who and her firm and affiliated entities who worked with the EB-5 program to bring in investors. We have a mediation ongoing, and I'm talking about mediation for those who don't know what that is. That is a supervised negotiation for settlement of a lawsuit that was commenced, supervised by a trained mediator, someone who, like a retired judge in the USC case, for example, where we're mediating. Retired District Judge Linares from the District of New Jersey is mediating that. And so the USC case, US construction case, that's the one that you referred to in some of your questions as the RICO case. That is in mediation. and we've already had not less than 2 rounds of mediation related to that, one with the USC defendants, one with McFillin. And it is ongoing. So we don't want to go to, and what we receive and do in those mediations are subject to what's called a mediation privilege. So we can't necessarily discuss that as to what's going on, but I can tell you generally that we are sharing information and not focusing on liability, but focusing on the ability to be paid. So that is progressing, we believe, hopefully in the right direction towards a recovery for you. We have 4 in settlement discussions. That means that some of these defendants said, look, we don't need to get to mediation formally. We can just exchange information and some numbers and discuss settlement. Those are ongoing also. And many of them are, somewhat nascent, just beginning in terms of those discussions, but they are progressing. We have had at least 1 or 2 settlement meetings with several of them. And we're hoping to have another one in the short term with some of the accounting firms we are bringing action against, which should generate recoveries. Each one of these items I just discussed are multi-million dollar recoveries for each of these categories. So they're not small items. The other remaining 8 proceedings, at least, are proceeding apace in the bankruptcy court. They filed answers, defendants filed answers, and we are simply going through discovery, and they haven't expressed a willingness to discuss settlement yet. Then we have others who we haven't sued yet, some that are in negotiations and some that are being discussed generally in terms of how we could resolve things before we commence a lawsuit. That is with several banks. We have, those are large financial institutions, some of whom have received very substantial demands from us, tens of millions of dollars for the payment of recoveries. We have done the same with law firms. We have several that we're talking to, and we have reached out to and are exchanging information that will also hopefully generate a settlement, pre-lawsuit or otherwise. If we don't settle, we will commence those lawsuits. We have 1 feeder fund, 1 accounting firm also that we are about to launch a lawsuit against, but have had some discussions with. That lawsuit will be a very substantial lawsuit for all the damages related to this case. We're hoping they have adequate insurance, but that is an action we'll be commencing probably shortly. On the, for example, 506 Henry Street, that's an example of where some of the claims and the working together hand in glove with the real estate arm that Rick has been spearheading. We have, with the litigation strategies, generated recoveries, and they're behind the scene recoveries. What I mean by that is liens asserted against the property by Enoch and by U.S. Construction were stripped from that property through litigation through New York State Court and elsewhere that were done in conjunction with the real estate group so that those values can fall down to your bottom line as opposed to these creditors. The same is true with the Turak claim that is in the process of being documented as a settlement as well, and that's the mortgagee on that property. We also have substantial, we've had some discussions, we've had depositions, and we've had notices and demands issued to Bloomberg, Bill O'Reilly, Red Seat, First Digital, and other media companies in addition to what you heard above in terms of Media Effective. So those are definitely a focus. That was a question in the pool of questions. They are a focus and we are making progress there as well. No numbers from them yet, but again, multi-million dollar demands. So what does that generate? What does this work generate? What has it done? So we have recoveries. Those recoveries come in various forms. They've come in cash, some of which has been very material cash that will result in, we believe, a substantial distribution above the 25 to 35% forecast. Those also are not reflected necessarily in cash. They could be lien avoidance. An example being that USC originally filed a mechanics lien for in excess of $4.8 million on all of the properties at ODR through aggressive motion practice, which is this equivalent in bankruptcy court of a contested matter. We were able to strike those liens and bring it down to a $2 million escrow, which we're still fighting about and we think we'll win on. That is an example of one issue. I just talked about Enoch. I just talked about USC liens on 506 Henry. Same in S3, the settlement with S3 resulted in value by lien avoidance and or claim avoidance being asserted by S3, millions of dollars there avoided by virtue of that litigation that would have otherwise be paid ahead of you because they were asserting liens that were secured on the property. That has been reduced by millions, thereby augmenting and increasing the amount of value payable to you. So I know some don't want even another cent paid on this litigation, but this is what gives value to some of this. That has resulted in the aggregate, just so you understand, we have over $500 million of demands that we're generally pursuing against parties. It does not mean that they can pay it. The $500 million reflects the demands that include funds well beyond what we believe these individuals, as we continue in discovery, are able to pay. So the recoveries that we actually generate are dependent on not less than the success of that lawsuit, which we can never guarantee because we don't know what a judge will do or if anyone goes to a jury, and the negotiations as to whether or not they are successful and we convince through a mediator or otherwise that we should obtain a recovery that is above forecast or below forecast, and then the collectability. So we're meeting with several of these individuals, and the process we use is, before we settle with a defendant, we obtain a financial statement, a personal or corporate or partnership financial statement that we verify through our forensic investigators, either Alvarez and Marcel or Rick Barry and others, to verify what assets we know they have, we can find. Does it match with their financial statement? How collectible are those individuals? What have they transferred in the last 4 years that we can claw back if it's something they did to hide assets? So we look at the collectability of these recoveries and we say to ourselves, is this a recovery that is worth the money pursuing, or is it one that we should settle for compromise, even though the claims are really strong, they're bad actors, but the ability to recover from them is far less than the damages they're likely culpable for. With those cases, we'd rather, and we discuss with the trustee and the advisory board give us guidance as to whether or not we should settle or not settle on those claims. But the financial prudence is that we don't want to put a lot of money behind lawsuits that won't generate recoveries. We want to put the money behind the lawsuits that will generate maximum recoveries. And that's what we're doing. So with the recoveries we currently have on hand in cash, plus actual and projected real estate recoveries, we do anticipate the distributions will be above the 25 to 35% range materially. Obviously, that we are shooting for distributions in 2024. You know that from some of the inquiries. We'll get into that, some of the questions. That also has a lot to do with the other side of the formula, which is claims reconciliation and what, you know, what those dollars and to whom those dollars get distributed, and the percentage everyone receives is also calculated by how many people and what the claims are that are getting it. That goes to the claims reconciliation process. So that's the next item on our agenda, and I'll turn that over to Mike if you're available, and I'll stop sharing.
Great. So if you've attended these, town halls in the past, you've heard me talk about claims reconciliation. We filed the first omnibus prior to the last town hall. We got that granted. That cleared up all the claims of the contributing investors. On last Thursday, we filed 3 more omnibus claim objections, our 2nd, 3rd, and 4th omnibus claim objections, to clean up amended claims, duplicate claims of investors, and duplicate claims of non-investors. So in order to make a distribution, what we need to do is we need to clean up the claims register so we have a clean record of each investor and what each investor's maximum amount owed is. We have the allowed claims, which are the claims of the contributing investors. Then we have the claims that are still disputed. We need to have those down to a single claim so that we're not reserving twice or 3 times, or in some cases 25 times what they're actually owed. Now, in order to do that, we had to, with Alvarez's help, go through a comprehensive process of reviewing the proofs of claim to figure out which claims are actually the right claims, which claims survive. Many of your other investors really enjoyed filing proofs of claim and filed quite a few. There were some investors that filed upwards of 25 proofs of claim for their claim. Some investors would file 1 proof of claim reflecting every investment they made, and then file in multiple different cases, in which case we had to figure out, you know, which one of those claims is the original claim and declare the others duplicates so we can get down to 1. Other investors filed 1 proof of claim for each investment they made. So if they made 4 different investments in the debtor, they might have filed 4 proofs of claim, and then they might have actually filed those claim duplicates of those individual claims in other cases. So we had to figure out which set of claims represents the full amount of their claim, which got complicated. Some investors filed individual investments, then filed maybe an aggregate of several, and then duplicate some and not others. It got quite complicated, but we've worked through the process, and we filed on Thursday the omnibus objections to take care of removing those duplicate claims. So with respect to the people on this call, the only people on this call that should be affected by the claim objections that were filed are anybody who has claims as a non-investor, who has a general unsecured claim, who filed more than 1 proof of claim. Those will be handled on the duplicate and the amended proof of claim objections. And then investors who are not contributing investors, your claims will be listed on the, you know, to the extent that you filed more than 1 proof of claim, your claim might be invoked on the non-investor claim objection and on the amended claim objection. So if you review the papers, you see what's there, and you believe that we've made a mistake in terms of, you know, seeking to expunge one of the claims, which you believe is not a duplicate, as is should be there with your other claims, please let us know. But the purpose of doing it was to make sure that you had 1 claim in the maximum amount that you've asserted, which is just there to reserve until your claim is ultimately allowed. Now, 1 thing to keep in mind is the filing of an omnibus claim objection is just meant to do cleanup. It's just meant to get rid of duplicate and amended claims. It is not a substantive objection to your claim. So those rights are reserved. We will be, once we have this cleaned up, we will be filing substantive objections to anybody we're not able to reach an agreement with respect to their claim. But our first goal was to make sure that the claims register is clean, because that is what will allow us to make a distribution, hopefully in 2024. We are highly aware of the fact that there are a number of older investors over the age of 73 that have claims, that have investments that they made in IRAs, and that need distributions this year. And we are doing what we can to make a distribution this year. Now, we can't promise anything. There's still a number of moving parts. You need to make sure that there's enough assets available to make a distribution, that it is worth the expense of doing so. You know, there are a lot of investors here, and the process of writing checks, making sure they're all going to the appropriate person and the appropriate amount, is a complicated process, and it's an expensive process. So we don't want to make any mistakes, and we can't just send out a new distribution every 5 weeks without, you know, making it very cost ineffective. So we need to make sure we can do it right. We are doing what we can to get a distribution out this year. Once we're locked in on that and we know we're going to be able to do it, we will let everybody know. That is the claims reconciliation. I think the next thing we're going to discuss is the investor questions.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. So your summary and ours collectively answered a number of the questions. So I'm going to skip those that have already been answered. So for example, when is the distribution expected? That's been answered to some degree and others. So let me jump to another one. How much can we expect in return of our money? And is RICO judgment still possible? Excuse me. The far greater than the expected amount of return estimated under the in the disclosure statement at page 51 of the disclosure statement expressly states between 25% and 35%. We anticipate, based upon the recoveries we've obtained to date and projected recoveries, that we will have a materially greater distribution than the 25% to 35%. So that is a good thing. The current expected distribution will be an interim distribution. First distribution will not be all of that money. It will be a percentage of it, and it will be in 2024, we hope. That is the game plan, and that's the goal, and that's what everyone on this call, from the professional side and the trustee and AIRN management, are working towards. As to the RICO judgment still being possible, it certainly is a possibility should we get to judgment. That is a long and extensive litigation. And a RICO is only if you, that's the treble damages that people get excited by, meaning the 3 times the damages, is that it has to go to collectability. You may get a judgment for $1.5 billion, but if you can't collect $1.5 billion because the party only has $5 million, then that judgment is not as great as you'd like it to be. So that collectability is what we're assessing. We have drill down with the help of Judge Linares and others on collectability on certain of these parties, and that is, you know, not off of our radar nor off of possibilities, but its benefit is going to be dependent on collectability. Next, has the issue with U.S. Construction's lien been resolved? That is actively in process. We had a call with them today. We have a call with them again on Monday. We have a hearing coming up in connection with their joint venture claims, as we call them. And so that is actively in process. They are also in active mediation, like I mentioned earlier, where we're discussing with them resolution of all of this. So without being able to go into the mediation privilege information, the answer is yes, it is still in process. It hasn't been resolved yet, and it could impact distribution. Next, that's the same question. Hold on, bear with me.
There's a question. I'd like to know if the checks are going to be mailed to the address on file, or will it be deposited in the creditors' bank accounts? So the distributions will be made by check, which is the ordinary way in which these distributions are made. So they will not be directly deposited via ACH or otherwise into a bank account. So you should, once a distribution is made, there'll be a notice sent out. You should be on the lookout for the check. If you have an address change from what's on from what you included on your proof of claim, then you should let us know as soon as possible. If you've already let us know and you've already gotten confirmation with that your address is effective, you don't need to confirm again. But if you do have an address change, from what you filed with your proof of claim, please let us know. Please let Omni know. We'll make sure that the claims register is updated.
Thanks, Mike. What is the timeline for this case? The timeline for the case, as indicated, really depends upon the litigation and the real estate sales may take some time, as Rick mentioned, as we go through the real estate development and sale process. There's no fixed timeline, but distributions will be made as available and possible during the interim period. So you don't have to wait till the end, we hope, until distributions continue to be made. Please update us on how politics, weather, and interest rates have affected and will affect the case. Obviously politics hard to gauge. We also don't even know what's going to happen in the interim. So that's a tough one. Weather and interest rates, certainly weather, we know what's happening in Florida and how that could affect properties. That is one thing Rick is, I'm sure, on his mind. Interest rates as well, certainly on his mind. We've seen some movement, obviously, in interest rates. How that plays out, I'd leave it to the business folks. I don't know, Rick, if you want to add anything to that, or you think you covered it.
Just root for lower rates.
That's right. That's right. And good weather.
And good weather.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if I could just chime in one thing with respect to interest rates, of course, as interest rates drop, activity in real estate transactions heat up, there's inverse correlation between the two. But also, although the interest rates regarding the cash that we're sitting on in our reserve accounts has not yet fallen, I suspect that it will as interest rates drop, you know, and real estate activity picks up. That's a good thing, but it also will negatively impact the interest that we're getting on our cash reserve. So it's a catch 22. So I just throw that out there for, yes, we are hoping for lower interest rates, both for this case and for probably everybody individually and personally, but there is, it could have a negative bearing in that respect as well. So.
Good point. Good point. So on the tax questions, which is the next area, I don't know if Tommy or Eisner, if you've looked at those, I know you saw the questions. Is there anything you didn't address in your questions or in your presentation already?
Yeah, I basically had all those questions up and as well as other questions we've received over the past couple of weeks since the last town hall, and everything was basically included in my presentation.
Terrific. I figured as much. So thank you. Even though I didn't fully understand all of it, only because it's way above my pay grade, I definitely saw that you covered that. So thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Criminal proceedings against Grabato, Salzano, and Scaturo. What is the status of Ray Grabato? He remains in the Philippines, to the best of our knowledge. We have not been able to identify solid assets from which to recover. We do not see him as a major recovery asset, as I mentioned, but he is not off the hook. We have judgments against him. We have collected against it. In fact, that 82 Osprey property that you heard about earlier that was sold, that was as a result of legal proceedings that we did through the judgment execution and negotiation and lawsuit against Visions Federal, where we recovered that asset for the benefit of you all, despite the fact that, you know, it took a few dollars, maybe a few cents on litigation costs. So that's what was a recovery. Next is there a hope of recovering the majority of our loss, even if it takes many years? That is the hope, that there will be a substantial recovery for you all. It will take some time. You know, we're hoping that the litigation goes well and that the real estate development goes well, but we can't guarantee the outcome. But as I mentioned, we're hoping and anticipate it'll be greater than the 35% forecast. Is the leadership at US Construction being investigated criminally? One is, as you know, we are suing US Construction's leadership and US Development, which is its successor, for the securities violations and actions civilly. We don't know what the criminal authorities never tell you what they're investigating. That's always one of those knocks on the door when they decide to prosecute or they have a grand jury. We don't know if they're prosecuting criminally or investigating criminally. We have spoken to the Bureau of Securities on the security side of things, and they are aware of our complaint, and we'll see what they do.
I would say one thing with respect to that. There's a balance here between kind of catharsis and recovery. I know we want to see all the bad actors, you know, criminally punished for the actions that they took here. But there might be some cases in which, you know, you have to choose between seeing them punished and having them work for years to pay back what they've stolen. So just keep that in mind as you're watching these criminal actions proceed.
Right.
Just in case anybody's interested, the sentencing for Nick Salzano is currently scheduled for October 22nd in Newark in the federal courthouse at 2 p.m. in courtroom 4C. I have heard from a couple of investors that wanted to go. I fill up that room pretty quick, but just that is when the sentencing for him is. The sentencing for Scutaro is currently scheduled for December 10th at 2 p.m. in the same courtroom in Newark.
Thank you. So that answers your question, by the way, of the other family members who've gone to prison. None have. Only Scaturo and Salzano are currently looking at jail time. Nick Salzano is 8 to 12 years, as you know. And you know, but we are pursuing the other family members. In fact, today we had a conference call with counsel to Bethany Salzano and Kyle Stiferny, his Nick Salzano's daughter and son-in-law, about the litigation we have against them and setting up depositions for the middle of November with them. So that is being set up, even though they pled the fifth in the pre-lawsuit depositions, or asserted they would not be appearing because of the Fifth Amendment. Next, what is the status of potential legal actions against companies that advertise investing in NRIA? I think I addressed that in the presentation on litigation. We've already sued and gone through basically trial against Media Effective, waiting for a decision. We have outstanding claims being pursued against Bloomberg, you know, others as well, as I mentioned, Red Seat, also a claim against Lou Dobbs' estate as well. And there are several others. There's a whole list of the media folks that we are investigating and pursuing. The settlements are ongoing, as I mentioned, and have resulted in these recoveries, some of which will be reported and reflected in the quarterly reports, some of which will be shown in the cash balances. The RICO action I mentioned is just a source of recovery against right now certain of the defendants, particularly USC and its principals and other participants. That is still outgoing. We're hoping ongoing. We're still hoping to settle it because that would be the greatest way to get us the most expeditious recovery for everybody.
There was one more question which didn't make the list, which came in late. The Omni website, we've gone through all of the town hall currently listed on the Omni website. We have one more town hall that we have scheduled on December 11th, which is the second Wednesday in December, 2 months from now. We will make sure to get that link up onto the Omni website as soon as possible. We're looking at our calendars to schedule the next several after that. And as soon as we have those scheduled, we will also add those links to register onto the Omni website. So, you know, please be checking the website. We'll be letting everybody know when those are up there and people can register.
Thank you, Michael. Those are all the investor questions that we received and creditor questions that we received. So I would turn it to you, Matthew, on behalf of the trustee, if you have anything you'd like to say at the end.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to reiterate that we've gotten a lot done over the last couple of months since we had our last town hall. And you guys and ladies have heard some of the work that we've done over the last 2 months. On real estate, we had the ODR Del Rey sale. We had the 82 Osprey sale. That's the Grabato house. We're continuing the construction of the Grand, which is near completion. These are all, major projects and major effort to get the real estate funds in. We got the tax statements completed. That was a huge effort, and now is done. The claims objections. I'm especially happy to see the claims objections filed and out there pending with the court. Again, the intent of those claims objections is not to substantively object to investor claims, rather is to get a comprehensive list of investors, each of which will have one claim and have it in the correct amount and nothing duplicative. That's the goal of those objections. That's not to say that there might not be substantive objections down the road with respect to, say, excluded investors or non-contributing investors or non-investors like general unsecured claims. But the point of the objections that we filed so far is to get one list so that we're prepared when it comes time to make a distribution that we're able to do so and not do it in a duplicative way. We're also continuing negotiations with multiple non-contributing investors so that they can become contributing investors. I'll just note here that the non-contributing investors, you know, we're talking about distributions at the end of the year. That's our hope. The non-contributing investors won't get a distribution. So if you're a non-contributing investor and there's not many of you out there, and I think you know who you are because we've reached out to you to see if you're willing to become a contributing investor. Most of you have said no to date. I would encourage you, I mean, this is something you need to talk to with your own counsel, but to get a distribution, you should become a contributing investor and seriously consider when we reach out to you to sign on to become a contributing investor so that you can participate. And we have succeeded in getting several of the non-contributing investors to become contributing. We also, as Lewis mentioned, we've got over 24 litigation matters that are pending or have resolved or settled. These are either in the pleading stage, some are in the mediation stage, some are in the discovery stage, some have gone to trial, some have completed trials, some have settled, and these are against dozens, if not hundreds, of defendants. So we just, you know, we have lots of moving parts here, and all of this is with the hope of making a distribution by year end. And I will just say, if we are able to make a distribution by year end, I want to forewarn you, it is not going to be huge. It's not going to be your 25% or 35% is projected under the plan of your claim. And the reason for that is under the plan, there's a number of reserves that need to be put in place for claims that are senior to you, including general unsecured claims, such as the claims held by U.S. Construction, which we have objected to, and we have active litigation regarding those. We've got a hearing later this month on that, but until we get a ruling from the court on those, we need to have those reserved. The same with non-contributing investor claims. We need to reserve for those. So hopefully the non-contributing investors become contributing investors so they can share in the distributions. But until they do, we need to reserve for those. The plan requires that. And there's a number of other reserves that we need to have established under the plan. Those reserves have now been established. And I think notwithstanding the establishment of those reserves, there still should be funds left to make a distribution by year end. And the beauty of having the reserves established now is that any future surplus funds down the road will also be available then to go to investors. And as we prevail in litigation regarding the reserves that we've established, we could then free up those reserves as well to go to investors. So, you know, again, a lot of moving parts here, but we're doing everything that we can to go full speed ahead on all of these fronts. And all of this is to work as quickly and comprehensively as we can to get you as much money as quickly as possible. So I know that was a lot of information. I just want people to see kind of what a comprehensive picture of what we're dealing with here looks like. And there you have it.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew, very much. I would highlight that, you know, the real estate has been really a tremendous effort and very successful. But I think it's important to note that without the, if I'm not mistaken, without the litigation recoveries we've obtained in the recent period, they would not have been able to make necessarily a quarterly, an interim distribution this year. So I think that the litigations have been very successful and very positive for distributions. And I'm very happy about that. And I'm glad that we were able to get that for you. And I think they'll continue, especially as the real estate kicks in with the lower interest rates and more sales, as Rick mentioned, go forward. We're hoping for further distributions thereafter. So thank you, Matthew, very much. Thank you, everyone. Any questions, just let us know, but thank you.